We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From inside Camp Randall Stadium, Learfield IMG College presents Behind the Badgers, an exclusive look inside Wisconsin athletics. Here are your hosts, Patrick Herb and Brian Mason.
Brian, what's the football team doing for Thanksgiving?
Probably going to eat better than you or me. They're going to head to Samba, the Brazilian steakhouse here in town.
Very Thanksgiving.
All the meat you could want.
The tradition.
Yeah, exactly.
Turkey.
It is a tradition for them.
Well, they serve turkey because it's usually steak at that place.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you change up the menu for Thanksgiving, maybe. Right, we'll if there's out. Cranberry sauce or anything added. I'll find out.
Welcome into Behind the Badgers podcast. I'm Patrick Herb. With me is Brian Mason. And we're coming to you a day late. I just got back from Brooklyn, New York, late last night with the men's basketball team. But we don't need to talk about that trip very much. But we are happy to have a podcast. We're happy because it's Axe Week, and we got a lot to talk about. It's going to be a ridiculous weekend in Minneapolis. I can't even imagine. Weather, the game day, everything should be
all that is on the line for this one.
Oh,
it's all adding up to a big Saturday.
I can't wait. We had a guest today that knows a lot about it. We had John Settle, the Wisconsin running backs coach, talk to us. Everything Jonathan Taylor. It was a love fest for Jonathan Taylor, deservedly so. But he, in particular, John Settle gives us his favorite Jonathan Taylor story and talks about recruiting and how you find the next Jonathan Taylor. So that's a fascinating interview that'll be coming up in just a little bit. But before we get into that, I specifically want to say thank you to all the listeners who have been giving us a shot this fall. We're having a ton of fun doing this, and we appreciate all the listeners that are giving us feedback and supporting us in doing that. It means a lot. If you want to get at us on social media, our Twitter handle is @BehindBadgers. On Instagram, we're @BehindTheBadgers. And you can email us too, behindthebadgers@gmail.com. Again, this is the week of Thanksgiving, so we are giving thanks. Or at least I am, Brian. Are you thankful?
I am thankful for everyone that has clicked on any of the links we put out because your support keeps us going.
And so thankful that our bosses give us a chance to just talk like knuckleheads once a week. But let's get into our trending topics.
Trending topic number one, I'll leave it to you. Men's basketball in Brooklyn.
I just said I don't want to talk about that.
We're going to talk about it.
My dog died 2 years ago too. You want to talk about
that? We'll leave that
alone.
Why
don't you bring that up?
This is topical. You've been on the ground for an hour? I mean, let's get into it.
Okay.
It was
very forgettable. It was a regrettable trip. Wisconsin goes to Brooklyn for the Legends Classic, presented by Roman. there's some jokes to be made there. We'll lay off of that. They lose to Richmond. And then they lose to New Mexico in back-to-back games. And the takeaways are pretty clear. Wisconsin struggled mightily to shoot the ball, particularly from threes. Tuesday night's performance was something that I've never seen in basketball. It's
two
not
for 26
yeah,
from three-point range.
It's not unprecedented, but it is pretty rare that you're going to shoot like that. I mean, it was mystifying for everybody involved. The players were mystified. The coaches were. And Greg Gard always says you can't yell players into making shots. You know, that was just, it's contagious with this team right now because they didn't shoot the ball very well on Monday night. Another thing that's plaguing them is too many turnovers. And, you know, coach, you know, Greg Gard talked about that post game, and it's something that this program has relied on that being a staple, and they can't get away with having 15 turnovers, you know, and 14 and 15 turnovers in the two games out there.
So I asked you after Marquette, how do you bottle up what the team was able to do against Green Bay and Marquette in those games? How do you get back to that now is the question.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there'll be some soul searching here. They're going to break for a couple days for Thanksgiving, and maybe that time comes at a good point. Because things don't get easier now. You go to NC State next week, and then you've got two Big Ten games against Indiana and Rutgers. All three of those games are winnable if the team that had won four straight shows up. This team, I've said it here, and I sound like a fool now after what happened the last couple of days, but this is a good shooting team. And I think I sound like a fool, but they really are. They have seven different players in their rotation. The top seven guys can all hit threes consistently. Clearly, they can all miss threes consistently too, and maybe that's what this team's DNA right now is, that when they're hot, they're scorching, and they're going to hit you for 15 three-pointers, and they're going to really look impressive.
I mean, is that what we're going to see?
But then they're going to have times when it's contagious the other way.
Right, where you're going to have a team that, when you depend so much on your ability to shoot the ball.
So defensively, they're playing pretty well. They played two really up-tempo, high-scoring teams in Brooklyn and held them both 1-59, 1-62, and way below their averages. Defensively, they're playing pretty well. They've done that all season. That's something good. You can rest on that's going to keep you in games. Because if you look at both those games out in Brooklyn, Wisconsin played not well offensively. And they were still a one-possession or two-possession game in the final minutes. They had no business being one-possession games the way they had shot the ball and the way they had executed offensively, but yet they were. So that's – okay, so let's at least – if you want to try and find some positives from it, which I
do. Let's do that.
Yeah, that's one. That defensively, they're playing well, and that's going to keep them in games. So now what they need to do is figure out how to clean up the turnovers, and you hope that they will, mature as a team and collectively, that the guys will kind of gel together in that direction, that those will start to clean up. Tradition at Wisconsin would tell you that it will happen. So that's going to give you more opportunities to miss shots. I mean, to take shots. Speaking of taking shots.
All right, well.
The trending, tell us.
So,
move on. I don't
want to say, we've belabored that more than you wanted to. So let's move on to the main event of the week. It's Axe Week. Weather may play a role in all of this, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But if you need any sort of motivation to get up for this game, and I'm talking players, fans, the two of us sitting here, whoever, like, I can't help you because this is what it's all about. We've been talking all month about this stretch run in November and trying to accomplish big things for this team, and now it comes down to one game where a trip to the Big Ten Championship, the West Division, and most importantly to the guys in the locker room, Paul Bunyan's axe, are all on the line.
Yeah, you wrote this. This script was written back in the summer. I mean, that this would be the ideal situation. I don't think anybody thought Minnesota would be in this position where the game means that much, that they're a one-loss team at the end of the regular season. But everybody around here hoped Wisconsin would be in a position where you're playing to go to the Big Ten Championship game. And, yeah, the fact that Minnesota came into Camp Randall last year and beat Wisconsin pretty soundly, the team has circled this game for a long time. Whether they would publicly admit it or not, you know that they have.
Oh, they absolutely
And the fans have. And maybe losing the axe for a year was good for this rivalry. You know, Wisconsin didn't win for 14 years
for the
in
health
a row.
Of the rivalry. Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. Probably.
So you know, there's
selfishly. No,
exactly. 1 year's enough.
Like, yeah, we're good now.
It's a hiatus,
right?
But there's a generation of kids who don't know, like, who had never seen Wisconsin lose to Minnesota. I mean, how old were our players when the last time Minnesota had won before their last year? 5, 6
right,
years old?
Yeah, exactly.
So they, I mean, even the kids who are in state had no frame of reference for that. So this. the juice is back.
Totally.
In
you,
the rivalry.
You saw it at practice on Tuesday, the first day they were out in pads, and it was as much energy out of in-season practice as I've seen in a long time. So we knew that motivation and energy would not be an issue, and the coaches have talked about it since Monday. It's about focus. It's and I thought the players had an interesting way of talking about it Monday, that it's a different game. It's a clearly an important game. It's a game we can treat the game a little differently in our minds, but the thing we can't do is change the way we prepare. Like, the preparation needs to stay the same, but we can put more emphasis on this game. Like, there's no getting around it. The axe case is in the locker room is empty, and you're going to hear that story beaten into the ground this week because it's true. Those guys have been staring at that empty case, or in some cases, a case with a picture of Minnesota celebrating with the axe and a row the boat t-shirt hanging in it for part of the year. So it's been something that this team has absolutely built up to. And you said Minnesota was probably not the team we predicted that this West race would come down to, but man, the Gophers they're legit.
Yeah. Yeah. Through the first few weeks of the season, they were just skating by non-conference games and not looking very impressive.
Yeah, they might have been the most fortunate 3-0 team in recent memory in college football.
So I was skeptical of their start.
Sure.
I think a lot of people were nationally. The CFP rankings were when the first CFP rankings came out and Minnesota was undefeated and they were not anywhere near the top 10.
Behind Wisconsin
right,
to start with.
Right. So there was a lot of reason for skepticism, but I take a lot of that back. They have been impressive offensively in particular. They are dynamic. Minnesota and LSU are the only schools that have a pair of 2,000-yard receivers and a 1,000-yard rusher. 1,000 yards receiving is a lot.
And they've got two.
They have two of them.
And both those
ridiculous
guys have 10 touchdown catches, too. And you're looking at a guy in Rashad Bateman who's averaging 20 yards a catch. Tyler Johnson, the guy on the other side, is averaging 15 yards a catch. So they're hitting big plays. And you've got a quarterback in Tanner Morgan who's playing super confidently.
So to me, that's going to be the case. That's going to be the storyline, is how Wisconsin's defense can kind of get right. You know, they've given up a lot of big plays recently. Some of them last week, it was gadget plays. Purdue emptied the chest out of gadget plays that they had, but they worked against Wisconsin,
especially early. I mean, I think the positive takeaway for the Badgers is how they buckled down on defense
that
late,
second half,
you know, and really clamped down. But early on,
Zach
definitely
said once they started playing real football,
right? Exactly. But yeah, you're looking at a Wisconsin defense that's given up 273 yards a game over its last two through the air, and those are not huge, gaudy numbers by national standards, but for this defense, they absolutely are.
And last year, you know, the memory that's in our mind is that Minnesota was able to have a lot of success offensively against Wisconsin. Yep. That they ran for over 200 yards as a team. They had the time of possession was a 10-minute edge for Minnesota. That's unheard of
right.
for Wisconsin. Badgers turned it over four times in that game, and Minnesota has bounds. They have running backs who can beat you if you don't tackle well. And then we've talked about their passing game. So
yeah, Jim Leonard characterized those guys, because I don't want to get lost in the fact that they've got a couple All-America caliber receivers. Jim Leonard talked about the running backs as something that has him a little bit concerned, because you've got, he called them second level or two level backs. He said all three of them, Rodney Smith, Muhammad Ibrahim, and Shannon Brooks, are all guys who will run through contact at the first level and then try to do the same thing at the second level and get big hits.
I thought it was interesting that Wisconsin seemingly opened up its playbook last week against Purdue. And I obviously they do that to beat Purdue, but I also think that they do that in some level to give Minnesota a lot to prepare for. They ran eight snaps out of the Wildcat,
with two different guys.
Had they done eight snaps total all season? Pretty close.
Probably not. But you had Groshek and Cruikshank both running out of the Wildcat. You had some option stuff. You had all kinds of different looks.
Jets sweep hands off out of it.
Right. And you've seen the last couple of weeks, they've gotten A.J. Taylor, Danny Davis, Aaron Cruikshank, all those guys have Kendrick Pryor.
Jack Dunn.
Well, I was talking about getting wide receivers involved in the run game.
Touchdowns.
But yeah,
I just want to say Jack Dunn, shout out.
Because then that was the tendency breaker there. You talk about giving Minnesota something to think about. You come out in a set that has been almost exclusively run for the Badgers, and Jack Cohn finds a wide open Jack Dunn in the back of the end zone for his first career touchdown. So a big diversification of the offense has been something that we've seen the last couple of weeks, and it's worked really well for the Badgers, because you've heard other guys in the offense say, hey, we've got playmakers, and it's our job to take the pressure off Jonathan Taylor. We can't make this a one-man show.
He makes it hard for Wisconsin to give anybody else the ball, though. I mean, as good as he is, you know you have to be balanced as much as possible, and you know you need to spread the ball around and do all this because you have to.
because he's the guy that will beat you, and defensive coordinators know that. They're going to keep on trying to slow down Jonathan Taylor.
But I swear, almost every time he doesn't get the ball, you're like, man, I want him to get the ball because he's that good.
Right, but you saw, I mean, Garrett Groshek had some nice runs in that game against Purdue. I mean, so
he did.
They've been able to find some change-ups, manage reps for JT so that he's fresh in the fourth quarter. And John Settle, when we get to our conversation with him, he'll talk specifically about that.
But load management. Is that the buzzword that's going around right now?
Yeah. And I also
LeBron James and Jonathan Taylor. Management.
Right. 23. Well, actually, no.
Is this the biggest game in Minnesota football history?
It's probably the biggest one since you go back to the early 60s against these Badgers when a trip to the Rose Bowl was on the line and Wisconsin won that game.
1962. Yeah. Number three, Wisconsin. Number five, Minnesota. Yep, so from a ranking standpoint, that one has to be considered higher.
And probably the only thing close since then, or the closest that at least from our frame of reference, is 2014 when the West Division came down to Wisconsin-Minnesota matchup and both those teams were ranked at Camp Randall. Mm-hmm. But even then, the Badgers had already secured at least a share. It sort of flipped where this year, Minnesota already has at least a share of the division. It's on Wisconsin to try to get their share and take that tiebreaker and go to Indy.
But when you throw in their futility for the last 40-ish years.
Because they were a national championship caliber program in the 60s.
Right. But when you throw in the lull that they've had as a program, throw in game days there, throw in everything that's on the line. I mean, the first time game day's ever come, ESPN game day.
They're selling out that stadium now. I mean, yeah, this is it. This is as big as they've had.
I think you could argue that, much like people who argue the 1993 Rose Bowl was the
watershed moment for Wisconsin.
Because of where they had come from. Right. This probably is, too. And P.J. Fleck, he's a character, you know, and he's got a wild personality and slogans, but you gotta, it kind of hurts me to say this, but you have to give him credit for where he's turned that program around.
Absolutely. I mean, that's painful. We've been over the most hated rival discussion on this podcast, so I'll leave it at that. But
so we talked,
but
about,
you got to give them credit for what they've been able to do.
That's enough credit. Yeah. So we talked about,
no, you're the one that started giving them credit. Don't even.
All right. That's enough. Both of you.
We talked about, hi Kelly. We talked about Wisconsin diversifying their offense and kind of being a little bit wild. Can they do that if there's 5 inches of snow on the ground?
You talk about what's going to make this, you know, the setting for a classic game. How about the fact you're playing a late November game in the Big Ten, and of course we're expecting somewhere between 6 and 8 inches of
Friday's
snow.
Friday's forecast
Friday
is calling
Saturday
for 3 to 5 inches of snow. Saturday, snow during the morning will give way to a mixture of rain and snow during the afternoon. Some sleet or freezing rain possible. Temps in the mid-30s. Winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation 100%. Snow accumulating 1 to 3 inches. That sounds miserable for me on the sidelines, but awesome for TV and for the backdrop of this game.
And selfishly, you hope it helps a team built around the run like Wisconsin and makes
slow down a passing
makes
game,
life hard for Minnesota.
Yeah.
That likes to throw the ball. So
But it's
cool, man. The stage is set. It's gonna be fun.
Yeah, I'll wear three pairs of socks and put feet warmers and hand warmers. I'll be good. I love it. I can't wait. I'd want nothing more out of this game than 5 inches of snow on the ground. I really wouldn't. And then a Wisconsin win. Trending topic number three. We talked about him a little bit. We talk about him every podcast. I sure hope he's playing his way into a Heisman finalist. Jonathan Taylor appreciation tour rolls on. Set last Saturday against Purdue was just the latest chapter of a remarkable career that we better be appreciating.
Three straight 200-yard games. He's doing what you want to do down the stretch of a season, and that's playing your best ball. And I didn't in the last segment. I want to give a little bit of credit, too, to what the offensive line's been able to do in terms of getting solidified and really.
Yeah, maybe they're kind of settling into their rotation a little bit. They've played a lot of guys in that.
Yeah, but now you've
throughout the season.
Jason Erdman and David Mormon, shout out to a couple of seniors that have solidified things at guard there. And then Tyler Beach with Cole Van Lannen out last week played really well at tackle. But JT's a guy that has proven again and again that he'll make the offensive line better, just like the line makes him better. So I go back to that idea of appreciation, and we talk about it with John Settle in this interview that's coming up. And because we've been so spoiled here with so many great running backs, I don't know that even we who see it on a daily basis have a full appreciation for what he's been able to do in his time here, because he's in rarefied air. I mean, he's 144 yards away from hitting 6,000 for his career.
That's a junior.
Which only six guys have ever done. Nobody's ever done it in 3 years. And he's got...
How far is he?
144 away. So file that one. File that one away for a sideline report on Saturday.
I think he can do that.
He's got two games.
Three games to play.
Three games would be great. But yeah, it was funny. You know, every time we go out and I grab him coming off the sideline after a game lately, it's been letting him know that he hit some milestone or some record that he's going to get asked about in his post-game interview. And so I tell him, I say, hey, man, you've now got more yards in 3 years than in a three-year stretch than any player in college football history. And he kind of looks at me and he's like, anybody? I said, anybody. Wow. I mean, so even he's amazed at and probably doesn't have a full appreciation for what he's been able to do. But that was a cool scene on Saturday.
Do you think he – does he know his numbers? Is that something
– I don't know that he knows his
numbers. I wouldn't call it a criticism if he did.
No.
But does he know that what – how many yards he's averaging in game, or how many touchdowns he's got, or anything?
I think he's
one of those guys.
I don't think he knows the numbers. I think he knows the context, right? Like he gets that because I talk to him every week about it. Like he knows the company he has started to play himself into. But numbers, I don't think he knows the numbers. No, it's crazy. The numbers are crazy.
So will you tell him that he needs 144 yards this weekend to break
no,
that?
No. Hopefully, I'm walking him to talk to Maria Taylor after the game, and I'm telling him that he's over 6,000 for his career.
That would be nice.
That'd be okay.
Doak Walker finalists were announced.
Third straight year for him.
Yep. He won the award last year.
Yep.
Who's his biggest competition? The Hubbard from
probably
Chuba
Hubbard
State?
From Oklahoma State. He's the nation's leading rusher. But his numbers have come back down to earth a little bit over the last few weeks while JT's been surging.
Yeah.
So the numbers are pretty similar now, both of them, and what JT's been able to do in the passing game I think helps his case a little bit. So.
And Wisconsin's higher profile, you know, from
sure.
a ranking standpoint, that doesn't hurt.
And he's a known quantity, right? He's gone from being the guy who showed up at this award show as a freshman and everybody's like, hey, look at this guy, to now he is...
Could that hurt him, though, that he's already won the award with some voters, where they'd say, you know what, let's spread it around. He's already gotten this award.
Maybe.
Shouldn't hurt him in the Heisman race, then, because he wasn't invited last year.
Right. Sixth in the voting as a freshman, ninth last year. Like ninth. He rushed for almost 2,200 yards last year. He was ninth. So I mean, I think he's playing at a level that he's at least started to creep back into that conversation to being a finalist. And a lot of it with the Heisman just depends on how the votes shake out and how many finalists they bring to New York. Is it three? Is it four? Is it five? And will he fit into that mix? And
Saturday's a big opportunity for
absolutely.
Him.
You're on a huge stage. It's the ABC marquee game of the week.
And this is when
this is a rivalry game.
He's got Herb Street and Fowler who have a lot of pull in the college football world. And they'll for the next week, they'll be talking on a variety of ESPN stations about college football. And if Jonathan Taylor's really impressive in front of them, you know that they'll push that narrative all week.
And the last time he was in front of Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit was at the Doak Walker presentation banquet in February. And afterward, Chris Fowler said to me, your guy should be a voice for college football. He is everything that is great about this game. So,
and that was even more evident after the game on Saturday when shouts to the Wisconsin football coaching staff on giving him that curtain call and calling time out to get him out of that game. You don't see that in football very often. Basketball, it's very common that you can get a guy to have him check out with 20 seconds to go.
It's a great moment.
And the arena can give him a standing ovation. You don't see it in football often. That was really cool that in what was maybe, you know, presumably his last game at Camp Randall Stadium. And then the way he responded afterwards by taking that.
The victory lap was cool.
I mean, he doesn't have to do that.
No.
He doesn't have to do that. And he's taking pictures with people and signing autographs and giving high fives. He wasn't the only one. A lot of players were doing that. Which is great.
But after he finished his interview on the field, he wanted to go be part of that. That was pretty cool. I mean, he may not have an appreciation for himself and what he's done for the game, but he is somebody who has a deep appreciation for what has been done for him and what has happened in his career, and being in Camp Randall is a big part of that.
He's a stud. There's no doubt about it.
No question. So we'll talk to John Settle here about him. We'll hear John's favorite story about JT, which honestly works pretty well with my favorite story about JT, but let's just let John tell you. We'll get to the man who's coached a lot of the guys that are on the wall in this room and the history of this place at running back, and the guy who knows Jonathan Taylor better than just about anybody. We'll hear from running backs coach John Settle. Coach Settle, pleasure to have you in the chair for the pod today. I got to ask you first, we've been using this room for our interviews for a while now. What's the story with the candy bowl, with the candy bucket?
Well, I think it's just something that the guys appreciate, and it brings guys together. You know, the O-line who's next door, they enjoy stopping by every day just to see what's in there. The receivers, when they throw a good block downfield.
Then they can have some.
Then they're welcome to partake. But until then, you have to earn it.
How much of what your group, kind of on the micro and then on the macro, the team, like how much of that identity is developed in the hours they spend in this room with you and together?
Quite a bit. We like to think that what you see on Saturday is really kind of reflective of what happens during the week in our classroom. A lot of time spent here. A lot of time is spent in the indoor with our walkthroughs, mm-hmm. that type of thing. So I would like to think that we spend a lot of positive time, a lot of good hours. We don't waste time. We come in here.
Down to business.
We get down to business. And they understand that this is where we learn. We do a lot of different things to relieve any anxiety. Mm-hmm. From a standpoint, we watch cut-ups, but then we might get on the blackboard, draw a play versus the look that week, versus the defense. And all the guys are able to do it. So when they get out on the field on Saturdays, it's live and in living color. So, and I want to be able to just see it, relax, and go play.
So it's like a safe space. Like they can sort of feel comfortable in – like I like that you termed it a classroom. Like there's a – there is a learning aspect to all of this.
Oh, without a doubt. We pride ourselves. We believe that we recruit smart players, number one. We want guys that are able to learn. I believe as a running backs coach that a smarter player is a better player. We ask them to do a lot of things, normal down and distance, runs, protections, third down runs, protections. And with the way defenses are nowadays, with the different looks that we get, things of that nature, you need to have a guy that has a good head on his shoulders, that can adjust, that can handle what people are throwing out, make adjustments on the sideline, that type of thing. And the thing that has helped us is being able to come off the field after series and communicate correctly, hey, this is what happened. So all of those things, you know, being a smart player, spending time in here in the classroom, understanding what we should see, and then being able to say, hey, well, they gave us this look. I think that all plays in and it helps us win on Saturdays.
How much of your time is split, or how is the time split between watching yourselves, either from game or in practice, and watching, here's what you're going to see defensively from the team we're playing this week? Because I think people would probably be surprised how much time you spend watching practice clips.
Well, you know what? We watch a lot of practice. We do. And you know, as coaches, we watch a lot more. And then what we do is we edit it, so to speak. So I'll bring in the clips that I think the guys need to see for corrections, just for praise, so to speak. You know, everything, not, you know, they don't always get that praise. But when they do things right, do it well, I want the group to see it, to reinforce, hey, this is how we want it done. But and so when they make a mistake, obviously, we're going to
they're going to know. It. You're going to let them know.
Yeah, we're going to let them know and correct it. And then, and again, the group can see the mistake, see the corrections, and then we move on. But a lot of our time is spent, we want to see, you know, how the defenses are going to pressure us on normal down distance situations, first down, second down. And then as the week goes on, progresses, we get into a third down packages, that type of thing, how we want to attack them, how they going to how they have attacked other teams, you know, during the season. So what we can expect to see. But it's kind of a mix, but we will spend a lot more time. And then Friday, we watch the Friday tapes are good. That's where we kind of get our edge, we believe, on Fridays. We watch a cut-up that that shows kind of how we can go out and make some things happen.
Like a, hey, you can do this, yeah, sort of thing?
Exactly right. And against looks that we've seen during the week that kind of correlates to what they've done. But things that we expect to see, and that's kind of the last thing we do on Friday before we leave the classroom, heading to the walkthrough or the jog through, so to speak. But yeah. So they leave with that in the back of their mind that we're ready, that they're ready, they're prepared, they know what to expect, and then we go out and play on Saturdays.
When TV crews come through that are calling our games, it's funny, there's a lot of them that remark about, hey, we're at a place where they have fullbacks this week, or we're at a place where you lift a fullback on the depth chart, or we're at a place where they've got fullbacks who contribute to the game. Is that a unique thing for you as a running backs coach, that you're coaching some you're coaching fullbacks and tailbacks, or is what they do so intertwined that it's not, it doesn't make a big difference in how you're prepping the room?
It's a little different. We have to take time to make sure that those guys get a few that moment in the sun, so to speak. And it's an important part of what we do. So we will spend time to make sure that when I install, we install the fullbacks assignments, then we install the tailbacks assignments. When we practice, I have Coach Clax, who's helping us with the running backs. I'll be with the tailbacks. He'll carry the fullbacks over. They'll do another drill, sometimes during the Indy periods. So they get that individualized special attention. Because they are a big part.
From when you played, how has the game changed? Because you were a very good college player at Appalachian State, went on to NFL career, but that's 30 years have passed. Basically, how has the game changed in your eyes as somebody who's seen it develop over these years?
Too many rules.
Yeah,
they've taken the physicality out of the game.
You sound like Chris Orr. He sat in that chair a couple weeks ago and basically told us the same thing.
He sure did.
That they're making it too hard to play football.
It is. I mean, it's tough. I feel for defensive coaches and players. I do understand the safety aspect of it to a degree, but blocking and tackling should still be a part of the game. And I'm shocked. Sometimes if you hit a guy too hard, the flag comes out. Back when we played, we were just getting started.
That was football.
That's football.
Have the players changed much, though? Because I think there's a lot of sentiment of like, oh, kids these days. But has the player changed as much as the game has?
I think the players have had to change because of the way the rules are implemented. Because I think if you got guys, say a Chris Orr, the rules were still in place, like we played with.
Like his dad would have played with?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he would play that way. And, I mean, he reckless abandon because that's the way he's wired. If he gets a chance to get the quarterback in his sights, he's going to hit him. And he's not going to worry about, not going high or going low. He's going to try to get the guy to the ground. Now you have to be careful how you hit a guy. You have to be careful on the sidelines now. If a guy steps out of bounds, right when you get ready to hit, contact him and you happen to hit him, the flag comes out.
Yeah.
So I just think the overall approach to the game, the way the game is being coached, now we have your tackling circuit and things of that nature, head up, things like that, which I agree with. You want to be safe. Man, you got to be able to run through people.
But still. But physicality is something that this program has prided itself on for a long time. Is that part of why you like being here?
Oh, without a doubt. I think there are two positions. I think if you're the O-line coach here at Wisconsin, I think you have a great job. And if you're the running backs coach here at Wisconsin, you have a great job. And because that's, you look back to 1990, that's what Coach Alvarez brought in, and kind of that formula hasn't changed. And to this day, it's proven that it works. And we're still winning ball games, still competing at a high level. And I think when we play some of the teams that are kind of spread now and don't use a fullback and that type of thing, I think it catches them off guard.
So this offense is now a changeup in a lot of defenses from what they're seeing week to week.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think if you look at Wisconsin, you look at Iowa, some of the teams that still play with the fullback, it certainly gives teams problems.
So I'll ask you the question that we get asked a lot, which is I can look right up here and see all the All-Americans on this wall. Many of them you've coached in your two stints here. How does this program keep producing running backs of this caliber?
I just think the people here, I think it goes back to, like I said, Coach Alvarez, laid a foundation. Coach Chris was here. Coach Rudolph played here. Coach, so you got a lot of Wisconsin people here in place, and they've seen up close and in person how this program has been built. And so we go out and we look for certain types when we recruit. And I think we've been blessed to have young men that feel like they can contribute. And then you get those guys in the program, whether it's in the running back room, more importantly, up front, those front.
There's a reason these two meeting rooms sit next to each other.
Exactly right. But you get those guys in your program, and the tradition and the history, and those guys feed off of that, carrying that flag and year in and year out. And you're looking for guys that, like in our case, JT, that wants to raise the standard and set the bar high. And then you get the next group of young men come in, and they want to do the same thing. They want to raise the bar. And so I think just the history of what we've been able to do year in and year out with the young men that we sign, recruit, and have an opportunity to sign year in and year out, I think that's what has helped us to be able to achieve this thing and hopefully keep it rolling for the next 10, 15, 20 years.
So what do you look for when you're on the recruiting trail? What do you look for in a player? Because I think people would probably be surprised at how much of it is kind of what's between their ears as much as it is the physical specimen that they are.
Well, you evaluate all the film before you hit the road. But I like to meet the young man, be able to sit down and talk with him because we have a really good group of young men here. You know, you're talking about 120 student athletes. You got to have bring in the right people that fit in with who you have on campus, and so I like to really sit across from them, talk to them, make sure they can carry on a conversation, understand that it's about the team, not about the individual. You know, so some things like I just want to get a feel for what the young man is thinking, how he feels. Where he feels like he fits, how he can help the program, and then I like, you know, when I get a chance to watch him play, I want to see all the. Does he have good vision? Does he have good ball security? His top end speed. Can he make people miss? You know, the on the field things. But we do a good job here. I want to go into the school, talk to the counselors, talk to the head coach, the athletic trainer, the principal. All the people in the school to find out about the young man, and then we bring all that information back, and then we try to get him on campus. And once we get him on campus around our guys, we want to talk to our guys and see what they thought about the young man while he was on campus, and all that goes into the decision making process. If one of those things out of whack, we the chance we won't sign them.
I think that's interesting because there's 130 FBS teams and everybody's looking at the same tape and everybody's a good enough coach to see a good player or know a good player when they see it. It's all the legwork on the back end to get to know him as a person that really seems to make the difference.
If you think back, we almost messed up the JT.
I was going to say, because when you're describing the perfect player there, I'm like, okay, JT checks that box. He checks that box. Yeah, what was his recruiting process like? I mean, some of the story has been told, but what was his recruiting process like from your perspective?
It was a little different because we, and I don't know much about that area of football, and so when the film came in, I liked the size, I liked the way he played, and then I kept watching, and I'm like, well, he doesn't really run away from anybody, and then you know, Coach Turner recruits that area, and I said, hey, Coach. How about the football up there? You're like, yeah, you know, it's good, but it's not great. And so we start to kind of put things together. I'm like, well, wait a minute. He should be running away from some of these guys chasing him, right? Yes. Okay, well, that's not happening. So we decided, we was like, I want to talk to him. And so we got him on the phone. We convinced him to run track. And then we went and watched the next his senior year. The first two games of his senior year, and all of a sudden, he's running away from people. So now I really like what I see on tape. A big body guy that now has top end speed, still has the ability to make people miss, that type of thing. But now, in my mind, he's becoming a more complete player. And sure enough, so we put the offer out. And now at this stage, I think he's playing hard to get. Because we didn't offer messaging. So we go through the whole, you know, I'm going to Harvard or Yale or yeah. Princeton or Rutgers. So we go through that whole deal for a little bit. But Coach Turner did a good job. And I tell him all the time, I appreciate you staying on him. Because he was the one, I was like, well, just stay on him. Just stay on him. Let him know that we're watching him, we're evaluating him. And then in the end, I had a chance to go sit down at the school, talk to the talk to all the people, the trainers, the head coach, the superintendent of the schools.
I can imagine what all this feedback was like. Like, as someone who knows JT really well, I can guess what they all had to say.
It was awesome. And it was, and shoot, like I said, that they had nothing but good things to say about him. And had a chance to, you know, meet his family and that type of thing. And in the end, we ended up getting him. And, you know, still knew we had a good football player, but didn't know how good he was.
Okay, and I feel like this is the story that's been told ad nauseum, but I've not asked your perspective on the famed scrimmage where, to your point, like, we knew he was good, but that night in the stadium when he emerged,
right?
What's your recollection of that, those events?
Well, it's going to be the last big scrimmage of camp. And so I'm thinking, going through camp, I thought, okay, we have this young man who has shown that he can handle some things. You know, physically, he's big enough. So I wanted to see what kind of package we can put together for him to be able to have him play and contribute and take a few reps off the guys. And he breaks one. And I'm saying, okay, well, there goes the package.
And this is the long run that he broke first, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, okay, well, this guy, he's pretty good. Maybe a little better than we thought. Okay, so we knew at that point he was not going to redshirt, and he was going to probably end up in it too deep. About the next series against our ones, he takes a screen, catches it with one hand, takes it. None of our guys could catch him. And I'll never forget it. Leon Jacobs. Still breathing heavy, runs over to me, Coach, he's the real deal. So it goes from, hey, this young man, he may be the starter. And at that point, I think myself, Coach Chris, every other coach on the staff, all of the guys on the defense.
Yeah, they knew.
At this time, thought this guy has an opportunity to be special when he should certainly be the starter here. And he's never looked back.
Have you ever been around somebody that was able to A, pick it up that quickly, and B, because, you know, I've heard you say before, it wasn't just, I want to know how to do my job. I want to know the whole picture and where I fit and how I can make us better. Have you been around someone that was able to just from the jump get going like that?
When I was a freshman, the way he came in was totally different. He came in and he had a focus that was wise beyond his years. I mean, it was to see a young man coming straight out of high school to have the focus to already be the months leading up to him reporting. He had already called the strength and conditioning coach several times to make sure he was doing the workouts correctly. He was doing the stretches right. So when he got here, he'd have that part down. To be able to go into the weight room and compete with the guys and get stronger. And so when he came out and we started to meet in June and go out on the field, his approach was just – it was totally different. And, you know, so you kind of knew this guy's not your typical freshman. I didn't really know what we had. Sometimes – early on, guys are all gung-ho because it's the first day, the first week meeting.
They want to flash, right? They want to show up on tape so you guys see them.
Yeah. Exactly. But then go to week two, week three, he's the same. Week four, nothing changes. You're like, you know, so, and you find out that's really who he is. He's a guy that really wants to accomplish something great. Don't just not be a part of something. He wants to set the, as he said several times, he wants to set the bar really high. And he has done that, in my opinion, in all but one area.
Which is?
Ball security.
Fresh topic after Saturday.
Oh,
game.
My goodness.
But, so proof positive, nobody's perfect.
Nobody's perfect.
He's close, but nobody's perfect.
That lets everybody know that he's human.
That's right.
All right.
Is there, I mean, I don't think we being whoever you want to say is we, I don't think we have a true appreciation of just how good he is, but he is certainly not someone who ever has thought, hey, I've arrived, right? He's always trying to get better. Does he have any idea how good he is?
You know,
because he's very humble, but does he have any idea how good he is?
I don't know if he does. I'm telling you, I don't know if he really realizes how much he's done for himself, for the University of Wisconsin, and for the college football world. I don't know if it's hit home yet. It's funny because I've heard some of his teammates, you know, tell him, "Hey, JT, I know you look up to this guy and that guy, but man."
You are that you guy.
Yeah, you deserve to be up there with those guys. You are that guy.
You've become that guy.
Yeah, and I don't know that resonates with him yet. But that's who he is. I mean, he has a work ethic that and a drive that, you know, I was telling some people in the summer, anybody has earned, so to speak, earned the right to take a rep off, it may be him. And nobody would say anything. He wants to win every race, every gasser. He wants to finish first. Every stadium, he wants to finish first. Every change of direction drill, he wants to finish first. But I truly believe that is just his makeup. That's in his DNA. That's who he is. That's what drives him. And it's fun to watch him.
How much of your job on game day do you view as just managing him? I mean, I see you always taking notes and writing down the reps and everything. Like, making sure he's fresh. Because like you said, if you told him to go out there and run the ball every time it was snapped, he'd do it in a heartbeat without thinking twice.
He would. And I think myself and Coach Chris over the years have done a good job because he's going to get his touches. And we want him to have, you know, 25, 30 touches, however it plays out. But it's just the way he gets them now. And so we try to do a good job of getting Nakia in, you know, in certain situations when we can, getting Garrett in early. And because our thought is if we can get him to the fourth quarter fresh, we got a chance.
And that's where he's done some special things, no doubt. We could probably sit here and talk about Jonathan Taylor all day. I know I could. What's your favorite Jonathan Taylor story? Probably hard to narrow it down to one. Yeah. What's your favorite story?
I'll just share this one with you. It was pretty neat. The first Dope Walker award show that we went to.
In Atlanta. That was an interesting trip.
Yeah. Yes. So he doesn't win it. So we stand up and we applaud the winner. And I whispered to him, it's all right. We'll win it next year. And at that time, I he looks at me. I think he think I'm, even though I don't drink, I think he's probably thinking Coach Seth's drunk. But
because you're right. In that moment, he didn't. He Bryce Love. Oh man, exactly. Bryce Love's way up here, and Saquon Barkley's way up here, and I'm not those guys.
Right.
But he is.
I believe he is. I feel like he is, and so I thought right there, we're gonna plant the seed right now that we're gonna be back, and that you'll win it, and he
sure wins, enough,
yeah, and he won it, and so. But we won't talk about the trip back.
I can say that's funny because my favorite Jonathan Taylor story is based around the same day when myself, Coach Set, Chris Hall from our video department, and JT had to make about 13-hour drive back from Atlanta to Madison because of some inclement weather that hit, and we were worried about our flight getting canceled. And I'll never forget, here's JT. We're moving down the road, and he's lobbying like, I can drive. I could take a shift. I could drive. And I'm like, man, there is no way we are letting you drive this car. And I'll never forget, I get him back to drop him in his dorm, and he gets out and shakes my hand. He goes, Brian, that was awesome. Let's do that again. And I'm like, man, we just drove 13 hours through the night on no sleep, and all you can think about is, let's do that again. I mean, that's who he is. He's somebody
who's
so
pure.
He is someone who has found a way to savor every moment, and hopefully we'll see what happens after this year, but hopefully we got at least a few more with him, and we can come up with some more great stories about Jonathan Taylor. So
yes, indeed.
All right, Coach Sett, appreciate having you on the pod. Thanks for taking the time. That was it was fun. We'll have you on again.
All right. This is fun. Yeah. First time.
Hopefully not the last.
Yeah. It'd be great.
Definitely not the last.
All right. Good luck on Saturday.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John Settle, for that conversation. Thanks, Brian Mason, for carrying the interview without me while I was in Brooklyn. Why did I even bring that back up? Okay, what else is going on in Wisconsin athletics right now? The volleyball team continues its domination, sweeping Nebraska for the second time this season. Did you have something to add on that?
No, I was going to tell you for a second time, but you covered it. I mean, that's crazy.
They're playing. This is so far. This is a historical season for them. Their magic number now to win the Big Ten championship is 1. It'll be a tough one. They play at number 8, Penn State, this weekend. A win there clinches an outright title, but their magic number is 1. So all they need to do is win one of the two games this weekend, Penn State or Rutgers. Rutgers is 2-16, and they will win the Big Ten championship. Now this sets the stage for the NCAA tournament, where Wisconsin will presumably be one of the top seeds, and that means they'll host the first two rounds, and if they keep winning, presumably the third and fourth round all the way to the Final Four. The NCAA tournament games will be at the Fieldhouse December 6th and 7th, and then hopefully again December 13th and 14th. And tickets will go on sale on Monday for those NCAA tournament games on December 6th and 7th.
And tickets are $12 for the whole thing. That's a crazy. We talk all the time about volleyball being a crazy deal. That's
$12 gets you all three matches. Gets you the doubleheader on December 6th and a game on 7th. They're basically giving them away. So what that means is tickets are going to go on sale on Monday, and they're going to go fast. So do we have a time for that? Do we know what time on Monday they're going to go on sale?
I don't know.
Okay, well, stay tuned to UW Badgers and the Badger Volleyball Twitter account, which is @BadgerVB. That's probably the best way to know. And then use 1-800-GO-BADGERS to call or go to uwbadgers.com to get those tickets. Again, Monday. You're not going to be able to wait long.
Speaking of things that go fast, shout out to cross country for wrapping up its season in good fashion. Alicia Munson was the NCAA runner up. She was once again named Big Ten Athlete of the Year. Just a tremendous career for her. Helped the women finish in the top 10 at the NCAA meet for the third straight year. On the men's side, Ollie Hoare was an All-American again, and I'm amazed at that dude's range. I mean, he was a national champion in track in the 1,500 meters, and then to go and be able to be an All-American in cross-country over 10K, that's, in the running world, that's some pretty crazy range.
That's really different?
Yeah.
Running 1 mile as opposed to 3 miles,
absolutely.
5 miles?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. Well done, Ollie. Women's soccer was well done also, made the Sweet 16 again. The season's over now, unfortunately. They lost to UCLA 2-0, but another trip to the Sweet 16 for Paul Wilkins' group. There's not a lot of Northern soccer programs that have sustained success. And Paul Wilkins has certainly built that here at Wisconsin. Shouts to them. Another shout out to Badger and Packers superfan Jazz Singh. People, if people aren't familiar with this guy, they got to check him out. He's got a blog. Just Google Packers superfan Jazz, J-A-Z, and learn this guy's story. He's awesome. He's from Perth, Australia. I think he's a friend of the program. He tweeted at us at our Twitter handle, @BehindBadgers. So I like him there.
Let us know if you're going to be in Minneapolis, Jazz. I assume he is. He's been to every game so far.
Yeah, so here's his story. He's from Perth, Australia. He's a teacher, a history teacher there. They have a deferred compensation plan where you can take 80% of your pay over a four-year span and then take a one-year sabbatical. So he did
Can we get that?
No.
So he did that and has used his year sabbatical to move to Green Bay, Wisconsin, and attend every Packer and Badger game this season, home and road, which has to be a costly endeavor, but he's racking up crazy frequent flyer miles. So that included being at Camp Randall last weekend to see Wisconsin play Purdue, then getting on a flight to San Francisco to go watch the Packers game on Sunday night the very next day. So I assume he's going to be at TCF Bank Saturday, and I hope he's there. I hope we can get in touch with him. So, Jazz, if you're listening to us.
Shout us out, Jazz.
Yeah, tweet at us. Let me see. We'd love to be able to say hi to you. But crazy, the stories he's going to have from this, there was an article written about him in the Green Bay Press Gazette that was pretty fun to read about how he's doing this all logistically and how people are giving him tickets and all the people that he's meeting. And it's a cool story. Superfan Jazz, shouts to you. What else we got going? It's Thanksgiving. I want to say happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Hope you have a safe and prosperous Turkey Day. And in the words of Chris Orr, let's go get that axe back. We'll tell you all about it next week.
Unless we get fired.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Badgers. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your preferred podcast platform. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.